Hello, guys, and welcome to the latest episode of the Blatzen Global Podcast. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Lucy.
And yeah, guys, welcome to our first episode of the new season. Season 2026.
You can tell it's been a while. It took us 15 minutes to intro this pod, guys. Listen, I'm ill myself. You can hear from my voice. Sorry, guys. It's not going to be a great listening experience with my voice. But yeah, I've got this crazy cold. The weather is insane here. But welcome to 2026 New Year. Normally, I don't like saying Happy New Year after the 7th of January, but we have not heard from you guys.
why the 7th? Like, that's so like specific.
Because if anyone is a Curb Your Enthusiasm fan, you would know that Larry David has once said, after the January 7th, you cannot say Happy New Year. And honestly, it makes so much sense. Why is it the 10th of January and I'm still saying Happy New Year? Okay. So yeah, how you feeling? How was your break, Eugene? How was your break?
It was nice, Lucy. It was good. Like, I did have some time off over Christmas, which is like pretty rare. Just obviously because, like, yeah, the industry that I work in, obviously media is like 24/7, or news media anyway. So it was nice. So yeah, like, exactly, just refresh and like switch off for a bit. But yeah, like, I'm glad to be back though. How was your break?
My break was good. It was decent. I was still working, so I was actually still busy at work, funny enough. But yeah, it was good. Normally I go to Senegal, as you know, normally we'll be podding like this and I'm in Senegal and stuff. But staying in London, kind of regret it because this cold is whooping my ass.
Oh, what was a joke.
But yeah, no, it was cool, but really glad that tennis is back. So much has happened as well, you know. I think we can crack on with that.
Yeah. A lot of news to kind of get into. I think first off, some news that we actually broke. So Taylor Townsend and coach John Williams are no longer together after 4 years of working together. Like, 2025 was actually Taylor's like most successful year to date in terms of like what she achieved, obviously winning Australian Open at the start of the year.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Also reached world number one as well in doubles. First mother to become, first mother to actually achieve that feat. But yeah, it was a really good 4 years together of like a partnership between them. And the news kind of came out of nowhere. Like, John, I think he messaged me the day he messaged me, obviously, was the day that we posted on our socials.
Yeah.
It was like completely unexpected, like completely out of the blue.
Even people's reaction when we posted, everyone was surprised. Everyone was like, what? Yeah, no one really saw that coming.
But apparently it was like a mutual kind of decision. So I don't think Taylor's announced her new coach yet.
I don't think she has a new coach yet.
Well, this is the thing.
Because from, obviously I follow her on social, like, I don't follow all players on my personal, only some of y'all get that privilege. but from what I've been seeing, it seems that she's hitting, but it's not giving. I think she even changed her team, to be honest. I'm seeing some new faces. I'm seeing some changes. I don't think it's just John. Maybe she came to New Year, was like, okay, I want like a brand new change and whatnot. Personally, I'm never really for players changing their team after a good year. You get that a lot of time when players are having a great season and then boom, they're just like, all right, you can go, you know. And I know we always talk about how she's, you know, 2025 was her best season, but I think she has improved so much since John has been on her team. So it's not even just 2025. I'm talking about their whole partnership. Mm-hmm. She has grown so much as a player. Mm-hmm. I feel like their partnership worked out well because you have John, who has helped her with her fitness and her mental. As you know, he's a big mental coach as well. While you have Taylor Townsend's, you know, tennis abilities, and you bring those two together, everything just worked out so well. She was moving better on court. She was more confident. Her fitness was great because her tennis is absolutely just so great. I just feel like once she's locked in, it's just a different beast. And I think John brought that out of her. But what really hurts me the most is that because John doesn't come necessarily from a proper tennis background, like most of the tennis coaches, I feel like we might not see him as much anymore, which is obviously really unfortunate, especially that it's nice just seeing Black coaches around, which we don't get as much, especially to the level that Taylor was brought to. So I hope that we still get to see him. I hope someone still, you know, knocks on his door and so on. Or maybe Taylor and Coach John B. Williams come back together. But yeah, what do you think? Do you think it was a good move or not?
No, I mean, it's difficult to say because obviously we're not in it like that in terms of, you know, on the team per se. So obviously Taylor has her reasons for wanting to like switch things up. And I don't think it's necessarily, I mean, look at Carlos Alcaraz and Juan Carlos Ferreira, for instance. Like,
yeah,
these things happen in terms of like nothing kind of lasts forever. So as much as it's a surprise, like we shouldn't be too surprised because yeah, like this is sport and like kind of,
I guess
it's like a merry-go-round in terms of like, I guess coaches and like the players that they end up working with. I mean, and you, like you just said, who's to say that they won't get back together like a few years down the line? Mm-hmm. Like, so I guess it just remains to be seen. But I think in terms of where Taylor's at, let's just say John could be proud because, I mean, considering from where, when he started working with her, you know, she's progressed so much and he can take a lot of comfort in that, in knowing that he played a big role in kind of getting her to where she's at. So I feel like, yeah, it's kind of, obviously it's unfortunate they're no longer working together, but at the same time, they've achieved quite a lot together. So that's definitely something to kind of be proud of, like on both sides. So
Yeah.
I mean, good luck to John. And obviously we wish Taylor all the best as well for the new season.
Hi guys, this is just a quick break. If you are enjoying our show and our podcast, please make sure to leave a review and rate our show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any other DSPs. This will help us to reach a wider audience just like you and get a lot more listeners so we can keep on building our community and give you these great podcasts as well.
And if you're watching on YouTube, please make sure you subscribe.
And as you can see here, our beautiful merch. Make sure you go on Blackspin Global Podcast to cop our merch. This actually helps us fund this platform to keep on giving you these podcasts and most importantly, to attend to the tournaments. And now we'll head back to the show. Thank you again for listening and tuning in.
More coaching news. Francis Tiafoe. So again, he's not actually confirmed this, like I don't think in terms of publicly, but we know. He's now working with Mark Kovac, or Kovacs. I think it's Kovac, because Kovac is, I think it's a Czech surname.
You know, you're asking the wrong person.
But yeah, Kovac has like, again, kind of, he's well known like within tennis, well, in America anyway, like he's well known for being like quite a technical coach. And I know there's history there as well. Like, so he did work with Francis when Francis was like a junior, like coming up like with the USTA. So
yeah,
there's like history there, which is good. And obviously we know that obviously Francis stopped working with David Witt. I think he announced that split back in November when he shut the season down last year.
Yeah.
And there's also Abdul Silla on the team as well. So Abdul Silla is a like high performance coach. Mm-hmm. He actually worked with Naomi Osaka back in the early 2021 when Osaka won the Australian Open. So basically looking to like just switch things up. And he did say as well, we spoke to him a bit like during the off season, he was like, basically saying that how he feels, he's basically in the best shape of his life, like physically and just raring to go. Because obviously he ended the season, I think 30th in the world, like a big drop in the ranking. So yeah, I know he's itching to kind of get started and like, yeah, I feel good about Francis in 2026. Like, what's your feelings about?
Like I said, I think for me, for instance, I remember we spoke about this end of season. I think for me, I just felt like he just needed to just change up his game a little bit, and maybe he needed a new coach for him to get to that point. He's a great athlete, great tennis IQ. He's so smart on the court. I think last season, unfortunately, though, I don't know what it was, but I feel like I said before, I feel like a lot of players could kind of predict where he was going and how he was playing. And I think he just needed to switch that up. And although you do have the top two, you know, Senna and Alcaraz doing what they're doing, as much as the massive difference between them and the rest of the guys, those guys over there, they're still very competitive. And I think they just getting better and better and better. And then that season was just, you know, not as great. But I'm not too worried because Francis has been playing for a very long time and he always tries to be at the top of his game. And for me, I feel like if that's your only really bad season, then, you know, you can still, and he still reached the final. He still reached, you know, he still went far with some of the tournaments, Roland Garros, which is not, you know, not something that he gets to do as much. So yeah, he just needs to just continue and just lock in. But I feel like this season he really needs to prove it because of people already counting him out. I know he just played in Brisbane. He did lose to Medvedev, but he's losing to an on-form Medvedev. Medvedev right now is coming in differently. Yeah. He's literally reaching the finals and he's playing against... Oh, shoot. He's playing against a Ukraine player as well. It's funny because both Medvedev and Sabalenka are playing against Ukraine players. But yeah, so Medvedev right now is on crazy smoke. So it's not like he lost to, you know, just like an any player. So he's looking like most of people's favorite to win the title tomorrow anyways. But yeah, I'm still looking forward to...
In the Brisbane final, did you say?
Is it Brisbane?
Yeah, he's playing Nakashima in the final.
Nakashima. Yeah, he's playing Nakashima, which is really looking forward to that actually. But yeah, so it's going to be interesting seeing how his season goes.
And then just the last bit of like coaching news: Hayley Baptiste and Franklin Tiafoe. So Franklin's no longer on Baptiste's team. I think it's now just going to be Eric Henchman working with Hayley.
Yeah,
obviously Franklin, again, friend of the pod, he came on the pod last year during the US Open. You spoke to him.
Good interview.
And again, Hayley, last year was her most successful year to date as well in terms of what she achieved and like career high rankings and stuff. So
yeah,
I guess players are just basically, I don't know, like just making changes, but like I guess taking ownerships of like their careers and like kind of having, I don't want to say like epiphanies, but yeah, they're just basically saying, listen, I need to switch things up. And like, to be fair, they are literally the kind of bosses of their careers. So I don't think it's like right for anybody to like question, you know, choices or decisions or...
Yeah. I mean, even when we did the interview with Franklin, he did mention that whether I'm with her or not, I'll always support her. I think the good thing is that, you know, they actually have like a close relationship between like her family and his family.
They are literally like family. Yeah,
like on the grounds, you see all of them together. And at least, you know, she's had that experience to have someone there. But yeah, and even for him, you know, seeing another black coach again was really great. I think he's doing his own thing now, back in the DMV. I don't know what it is specifically. I just saw the post through our BSG account. But I'm looking forward to Hayley. I think Eric is really, really helping her with her game. They're a great team together for sure.
So that's obviously coaching news kind of taking care of. Well, just quickly, we've not got it on the rundown, but what were your views on Alcaraz and Ferrero splitting?
Boy, that was a massive shock. The funniest thing about that news is that everyone was spiraling. Like, I was listening to 5 different podcasts, everyone was saying a whole bunch of nothing because no one was understanding what the hell this is coming, where is this about? But obviously from what the things that we gathered, it wasn't necessarily a decision that, it seems like they didn't want this decision. It was a decision made between like the team, a lot of talk about it being the dad. You see what I mean, guys? I keep telling you guys, get rid of these fathers. You are not Richard Williams. You cannot be. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think it was a good shout. Because I think Carlos is entering a very dangerous season. I think there's a lot of pressure on him. I feel like people underestimate how much pressure on these two boys because they are the two main competitors. I'm not saying the rest are not, but they are the two main competitors. So I don't know, man. I don't know. And I think it's going to be in his head a lot because they had a very close relationship. He's known him since he was a kid. Like, there was just, they have this bond that you just can't take. Like, when you read his interviews, he sounds like a sad father who just literally lost his son to like a parent custody type of thing.
Didn't want it to end.
He didn't want it to end. And it feels like the same with both of them. So I don't know, maybe some contract issues, some money issues. We are in a recession, guys. Don't get it twisted. Ain't nobody got money. So maybe, I don't know, he maybe asked for more money. His dad was like, F off, we don't want to give you that, and took it to a whole nother level. But would you risk that for your son's career? I don't know, man. It's just, It's annoying because I feel like we'll never know the truth. Because I feel like Ferreira, out of respect, will never say what it is. And Carlos, out of respect, will never say what it is. I feel like someone needs to put a microphone in one of the team's bedroom or something and get all the tea. I feel like that's the only way we'll know the truth, honestly speaking. I feel like they love
undercover, like investigation.
Undercover. And that's why when I stopped listening to the podcast talking about it, because I was like, no one saw this coming, so no one knows a real story. So... what do you think?
No, that's interesting. No, I agree. Like, just a massive shock. But I don't know. I think it's difficult to say that. I think Alcaraz has shown that he can kind of handle the pressure. So I don't know if I necessarily agree in terms of like he's going to be, I don't know, this season more than ever, like he's going to be under even more pressure. Like, I feel like it's almost the same, to be honest. Like, he's the guy that everybody wants to beat, and he knows that. Like.
Yeah, but keep in mind, when Sinner had his ban, every single eye was on him. And Carlos felt that pressure. He said it himself. It wasn't until he got to Clay season, his season, where he was like, you know what? Let me calm down. And it ended up playing a little bit better. Mm. So that's the thing. I'm not saying he doesn't know it fully, but I don't think he's 100% there yet, which makes sense. He's still pretty young. Like, it's just because he's playing the best, he's still pretty young. The same way we said it would take time for Coco to win the confidence is the same way that Carlos, little by little, he's feeling a little bit less pressure. So that's why I'm saying that as well, because all eyes was on him. My guy literally got his ass whooped by Draper, no disrespect at all, and then literally won that title. But you get what I mean? Everyone expected Carlos to pick up every single title when all he did was pick up Rotterdam, and then he went to Clay and was like, all right, let me relax. And I feel like if Clay didn't happen, it actually would have kept going. It's because Clay is his comfortable surface. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
But yeah, good luck to obviously Juan Carlos as well. And like, again, what an achievement. Like, they achieved so much. Some social news. So this is the kind of things that we've missed. Obviously, we've been away, so we've just not been able to talk about it. But Venus Williams, she got married. Congratulations.
Hey.
During the off-season. So she's also been awarded a wild card for the Australian Open, which will mean she'll be the oldest woman to play in the main draw of the Australian Open at 45 years old.
And I need people to stop boring us with, should Venus Williams still get a wild card? Is enough, okay? Is enough. I don't know why we're still debating this, okay? Because you might not care, but the people that are using their credit card to go buy a ticket will go and do that just for Venus Williams. And Mr. Craig right there, he wants to sell his tickets because he just increased the prize money like crazy. Do you still want your prize money, players?
A seven-time Grand Slam champion. I'm sorry. Like, if you're still playing tennis, you deserve a wild card.
Like, and for people that are saying, oh, give opportunities to other players, tell them to work harder. Tell them to work harder. I'm sorry. Venus Williams has done too much for this sport for her to not enjoy the fruit of her labor and walking in like she can do whatever she wants. So if you guys want to take that wild card, come take the wild card away from. Come get your chain.
I think also as well, it's not like she's not competitive. Like, she started her season this year in Auckland and lost to Magdalenette in three sets. Like, so she's still playing, like, you know, she's still able to compete, basically.
Listen, people that are watching her matches are like, bro, this is crazy. Like, some of the shots that Venus was hitting made no sense. And that goes back to my point. There's something that she's doing that you guys are not doing right now. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like there's going to be a time a lot of you are going to regret and be like, damn, like, she's not playing anymore and blah, blah, blah. And you need to remember as well, Venus, a lot of the reason why she's not been able to play is because of her health. It's not like she didn't want to, you know, it's not like she doesn't like the competition. It's not like she doesn't like the competition. It's not like she doesn't like the sport. She loves it so much that she's like, all right, wedding done. Where she looks stunning, by the way. Yeah, no, oh, did. My she God. She looked amazing. Five-day wedding. Mwah. Beautiful bride. After all of that, she still packed her bag, told her husband, come right up, we are going to, you know, all the way there in New Zealand and then Australia. So yeah, I don't care. I will never ever be mad at her getting a wild card.
I could also see Serena and her playing, because Serena, again, we were off obviously when this happened, but yeah, Serena entered the testing pool.
What do you think about that?
I think she's looking to play US Open with Venus. And I feel like Venus will probably end it there, as in at this year's US Open.
Okay.
Because I don't think she wants like the whole build up and to say, oh yeah, this is my last season. Like, I think it's just going to be like a pretty, I say abrupt, but I'm just putting two and two together. And like, okay. I don't know if it's going to happen, but I just feel like that's most likely or a likely possibility, I'll say.
Okay.
And I'm not mad at it. I think it'd be amazing. Like for Savina, for her and Savina, like that is, it's
that would be cool. It would be exactly. cool. Exactly. It will be cool. The thing is that Serena has played so many times with my feelings. I have learned to not be too excited. So unless I see Serena Williams with a custom Nike fit on a court, that is not an exhibition. Empire say game, set, play. I am not getting excited because, woman, you have played with my... I know Serena like too much, man. She's played too many times with our feelings, bro. Even when she came back on the TL, she was like, oh my gosh, I don't know where this is coming from. I'm not playing it. I'm not coming back. I was like, you can't fool me. You can fool them, but you can't fool me, girl. Like, that's the thing with Serena. She never wants you to know her next move. So I'm just saying, and sitting down. Even if she tweets, I'm coming back, I'm not buying it, bro. Till I see you on that blue court, I will be excited.
I don't think she's going to come back to play singles. I think it's just going to be doubles.
It'll be doubles.
Yeah. I don't.
That makes sense.
Definitely not.
That makes sense.
So yeah.
I think what you say that's going to happen US Open, that will make sense. I won't be mad at that. But again, that woman has played with my feelings too many times. Is enough.
Okay.
Lovely queen.
staying with like social stuff. Again, some of you might have missed this. So I've called it the battle of the generations between Joe Wilfred Tsonga and Patrick Mouratoglou. So basically, I think Joe Wilfred Tsonga was on a French podcast or some kind of...
Yeah, it was on a podcast, yeah.
It was a podcast, yeah.
Yeah.
Talking about how he would like to have seen Carlos Alcaraz and Yannick Sinner, you know, play in the generation of the big three. And he also mentioned...
And he even mentioned Del Potro, Murray... And younger Djokovic, Nadal.
Ringo, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think basically he was implying that then was a tougher time than now in terms of like there were more challenges to the big three. Mm-hmm. Mouratoglou then said, what does he have? He hasn't really got like a... He just basically speaks on his socials, doesn't he?
So Patrick Mouratoglou is basically a tennis content creator on the side too. and that's not disrespect, you know? I see you, Unc. You got to do what you got to do.
So yeah, in response to that, Mouratoglou basically said that he doesn't agree. He basically said that Tsonga would find it difficult to beat the likes of Draper, Shelton, Felix Auger-Aliassime, Taylor Fritz.
Yeah.
And then they kind of were going back and forth a little bit. Well, I say back and forth. Tsonga then responded saying that with all due respect, like, you're not a player. So like, show some more respect.
He was like, you'll remain the coach. And he literally took a screenshot of Patrick's Instagram because it says the coach. And he even said le coach at first. And then he said the coach. And I was like,
This is going to sound mad, but why I found it even more funny is because like, it was all happening in French. And like, obviously I don't speak French. So, but I was seeing things obviously being translated. That's how I was kind of keeping up. It was more funny because it was all happening in French. Obviously, Patrick was speaking in English.
In English.
But yeah, Joe Wolf was
Tsonga was like, you're going to hear me out. Okay. You're going to hear me out. It was funny.
I just want to say, Lucy, I feel like two things can be true. So
okay.
Where I'm going with this is...
Yeah.
I don't necessarily disagree with Tsonga and I don't necessarily disagree with Patrick Mouratoglou.
Okay.
So, because one thing I do hate, and this is done like in all sports, like this comparing of generations, like it's an impossible argument when you really think about it.
Because that's fair.
So much kind of has changed within like 10 years. Technology.
That's true. Even the tournament, the way it goes and everything.
This is what I'm saying. The way athletes kind of look after themselves now as well. Like things are like at such a... The level is higher, I'm going to say today, because of technology. Mm. And I just feel like that's just a fact. Like, and I'm not a scientist, but that's just how I feel. And I don't necessarily... Like I said, I don't just disagree with Tsonga either, because obviously Del Potro was an amazing tennis player. Wawrinka, again, he's like a two-time Grand Slam champion. Murray, literally, he's considered like in that argument with the big four, like with Nadal, with Federer, with Djokovic. So again, it was a crazy time. And Songa, he was literally with them. Like he was competing with those guys.
Yeah.
So
it
definitely would have been nice to see like Songa now on the tour, but obviously he's retired. So we can't like say, oh yeah, basically this is how he matches up to Draper, Shelton, Felix. Like it's an impossible argument.
But the thing is, I feel like I agree with you. I don't feel like it's hard to like really compare and stuff, but I feel like what Songa was also trying to say is the competition level that they are at is just completely different, because like, I don't think Songa, the thing is, maybe because it was in French, but I don't think Songa didn't say it in a way to disrespect the rest of the ATP players. Mm. He really wasn't. He was just saying like, listen, at the moment, we're only seeing this high level of competition between these two. I would have loved to see it if there was a different player with different type of abilities to also make it complicated for them. He's not saying it in a way of like, it means the others are not doing it because we're still getting it in intense matches. That the Alcaraz and Draper match, it was intense. Or even the Alcaraz Fritz match in Rolex Masters, it was intense. I still think about that second set of Felix and Sinner match at the US Open. That was a fire match. To me, that was one of the best sets of the ATP last year. Do you get what I mean? So at the end of the day, I think the issue is when people talk about Sincaraz, a lot of people think we're just completely forgetting the rest.
At the end
of the day, the truth is, when these boys are on court, before they're on court, we're all yapping. When they're on court, we're looking at them like, nah, this is different. Bublé called this guy AI for a reason, bro. We're not just talking for no sake. I think the issue with the back and forth between Patrick and Songa, though, was that Patrick got a little bit too comfortable the way he was talking about Songa. Like, I actually think Patrick was joking a little bit, but I think Songa took it personally, and rightfully so. You can't tell someone how to, they're supposed to be taken something. And maybe behind the scenes, they had a little bit of beef that we don't know about, because what a lot of people don't know is that a lot of the French do not mess with Patrick. A lot of them. So even
allegedly,
the French...
Allegedly.
Just can't get sued on the first part of the year. Hello. Allegedly, like even the French French Tennis Federation, they do not really mess with Patrick, allegedly. So that's the thing. But I genuinely think Patrick was just being cheeky and funny. But I can see Songa looking at this thinking, hold on a minute. Who are you talking to like that? Especially in that, it's not like Songa was like, I'm going to stop playing just for the sake. I think people, again, a lot of these players have stopped playing because of injuries, and it's never easy. That's why you have Serena never saying the word retire and saying evolve. They don't want to say it. It's a hard thing to do to get up. Del Potro was crying his eyes out when he had to leave the thing, and now he's telling us he can barely go up, down the stairs because of his injury. Like, it hurts them, like, and rightfully so. But I think people just need to keep in mind that when we are talking about these two, we are not disrespecting the rest of the ATP. We are saying you guys are great, but we need a little bit more competition. And that's why some of us, including myself especially, I'm bored of the Sincaras final. If I get Sincaras final, I don't care. Everyone's talking about their bloody exhibition where they're getting 1.7 million, whatever they're getting. I don't give a heck. I was having a time of my life with watching the United Cup. So, yeah, but at the end of the day, what people also need to keep in mind is that this is not going to be forever. I still think this year we're going to have a different Grand Slam champion.
On the ATP?
100%. It can't continue like this all the time. Even if it's not this year, it's going to happen eventually. But I don't think what Songa said was far off. I'm sorry. I think if people watched it and listened to it in English, because all the French-speaking people agreed with Songa. Mm. Only the people who don't understand French as well. So I think it was a language barrier. And mind you, I never do the language barrier thing. And because I understand both, I didn't really see what Songa said as, you know, as disrespectful. Patrick, however, when he replied to Songa, was a little bit disrespectful, because you didn't say, oh, I disagree, and then explain. You say you disagree, and then you talked about his sports, his abilities. What are we doing here?
Yeah, that was a bit mad when he was saying about, like, what did he say again? He had like one great season or something.
Yeah, exactly. Who are you to be saying that? And that's why Songa was like, hold on a minute. You want to be a player so bad, but you'll never be. You will always only be a coach. ball.
Yeah, yeah. So, that's when it got like personal.
Exactly. It got personal.
It's an interesting one.
But I love it. I love it. You know me. I love the beef. Keep fighting, guys.
The last bit, like social news. So we're now seeing a trend. Like a lot of players are starting YouTube channels. So during this offseason, big sigh, Lucy.
Big sigh, because the problem is they start it, give us one or two vlogs, and then they stop. Players, please, if you're going to be about it, be about it. I know vlogging is long, because whenever I even try to vlog, whenever we do tennis tournaments, within day two, I put that camera there.
It's not easy.
But you guys got the resources. Get you a content creator, get you a videographer, tell them to edit. You look at the final edit, or tell your agent to look at the final edit, or a fan to look at the final edit, so it doesn't look boring, and then post it. Stop teasing me about a vlog and a YouTube channel, and then take it away from me. How many have we got yet last year? And none, the only person that does it and does it really well is
Casakina.
She is amazing. Only her. All of you guys follow. You put this whole big production team, and then you don't give me nothing later.
Because I mean Ben Shelton, he started his, I want to say in November, was it the same?
And we are in January. Where's the next video?
Stop it.
Exactly.
We were in it as well. A little cameo from BSG, if you saw it. Salute. Artifice as well, he also started his own, kind of revealing some interesting news as well, like in terms of like where he's at with his like rehab. Very interesting too, because I'd like to get your view on this, Lucy, too. I feel like people are kind of like blowing his injury out of proportion, but they're I need to be careful the way I word this. Obviously, people are concerned, but I feel like people are like putting way too much on it and saying, "Oh, like this potentially could be like the end of his like career."
I don't think it's far-fetched, though.
Lucy, I do feel like it is.
It's a serious injury. What he has, it's not one small injury.
I know, but also because I watched the first vlog is that what you call it, a vlog?
The first
episode anyway on his YouTube, and again it was all in French but translated, and I from what I'm just doing going by eye test from like what I'm seeing, I feel like he looks in good shape. He's lost a lot of weight, they said, because he was carrying a lot of weight, which wasn't good for, you know, his back. He's been training in Kuwait like during the off season.
Okay.
And I don't think it's a bad thing to miss the Australian swing, to come back and play. I'm guessing you'll play...
I think they say Montpellier he's playing.
Okay, but I'm saying like Indian Wells and Miami, okay. And then obviously going to the clay. Like, I think that's pretty smart.
Of course.
Because like you said, he's still young. So of course it's never good to miss a slam. But how many Australian Opens is he going to play like in his career? He's got like 10, 15 years ahead of him. Mm-hmm, so, of course, it's never nice to see a player get injured. But I feel like he'll be able to bounce back. And I feel like Artifice has shown us as well, in terms of the kind of player he is, he can compete with these guys.
And
like,
100%.
A lot of people are kind of expecting him to be like the guy, the next guy in line in terms of entering the top 10. Competing. Yeah. So
he was a lot of people's favorite for last year's season prior to his injury. Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. So I'm not gonna like subscribe to this idea that, oh my god, like this could, like, he's never gonna get back to where he was. I feel like if anything, he's gonna be more kind of eager and hungry to kind of get back to that spot. And that's gonna make him achieve like great things. I'm praying for it.
Hungry and humble.
Love it. Go on. what's your view?
I mean,
and also on the whole like YouTube player thing as well.
Like I said earlier, I love the YouTube player thing. I feel like the sport is still behind in helping promote the players. So I feel like the players taking the mat into their own hands is perfect. I just want them to be more consistent with it. Obviously, I understand it's hard because of everything. But like I said, a lot of these players can afford to have someone to take full control of it and do it. Literally, Aryna Sabalenka, her production team is what's his name? That famous documentarian that passed away, the French one, Antoine Bordeaux-Jacques, is it? No, not him. Anyways, I always forget his last name, but she literally got a massive production team. So that's my thing, is that be consistent. Sinner, he started it. Sinner would have been great during this offseason, because Sinner, we know nothing about you. We know absolutely nothing. However, we also need to keep in mind that I find it funny when people say, oh, players need to be promoted more. I think some, and this is no disrespect, it's fine, you can be boring. I think a lot of these players are actually just boring. They have nothing to really share and talk about. And that's why I think Sinner's vlog did not really pop up. I was watching Sinner's vlog and I was like, and it may know, like, for example, he would say like, yeah, the next thing, they'll put in a blank screen and say on the screen, oh yeah, he went out to eat or spend the rest of the day just chilling. And I'm like, this is what people want to see. We already know that you're a fantastic player. What do you like? What don't you like? What's your cheat meal? What's the thing? Like, you think these are the things, like, these are things that fans are interested in. That's how you get people into the sport. So I feel like the ones who have entertaining personalities, Feast, Shelton, Sabalenka, who are doing all these vlogs, they're great. Just give me more of them. That's it. That's all, really. But in terms of After Your Feast, I feel like we're just being dramatic because we love him and we miss him. He is great for the sport, which is why he's still collecting endorsements. This guy has been injured since. And every day I open Instagram, he's endorsed somewhere else. So maybe this, it's actually crazy. But maybe that means there's more behind the scenes that we don't know. Maybe he's not letting us know too much that I'm actually getting better, but the endorsements are a sign. Because in this economy, for you to be keep on getting signed, yet you barely even touched the court.
But is he PIF ambassador?
PIF ambassador and all of them things. Like, there's so many things that he's literally, I don't know which one it is today, but today I opened Instagram, he was signed to something else. So, I mean, like you said, you're right. He's only 20 or 21. And yeah, he's still young and stuff, but it's just, I think if his injury wasn't that big of a deal, I don't think people will be saying that. I think people will be like, yeah, just wait. But it's still great for him to wait. If it has to take another year for him to be 100%, I'll 100% take it, because him playing at a French Open is what led this to even be worse, because he actually felt the injury before Roland Garros. But because he kept losing after the first round.
It was Miami, that I think he said it.
He felt, yeah. And it was always against Zverev.
But before we get into, is that all in terms of?
Yeah, that's all.
I'm glad you kind of agree with me as well. Like you said, people.
Yeah, no, 100%.
People are being very dramatic, and it's understandable. But
yeah.
Again, it's not on the rundown here. But Osaka, so Naomi Osaka, she's now she's no longer with Evolve. She's kind of stepped away from Evolve, the company that she co-founded with Stuart Dugard. Interesting, Lucy. I do find it interesting. I'm not going to lie. And again, we don't know the ins and outs in terms of like the reasons behind it, but it all kind of happened or coincided with, and again, it's not something we've spoken about because I don't really have that much to say about it, but the battle of the sexes between Aryna Sabalenka and Nick Kyrgios, that got so much kind of press and like media kind of eyes were on that.
Yeah.
And for me, for like the wrong reasons, I don't even know, honestly. Like, it was a bit of a, I don't want to say shit show, but.
It was though, respectfully. respectfully. We love Stu, we love Evolve.
Both players have their reasons basically for doing it. And when I say reasons, I mean money. Like, for me, that's a valid, you know, like you said, look at the economy we're in. Do you get me? So.
But I will play devil advocate here. And I really want people to actually read the interview that Stu did with Ben Rothenberg on Bounces. And he actually explained, I feel like everyone was repeating the same thing. No one went to the actual person who was really behind this, which was Stu. Mm. And Stu explained something that was really interesting, because the number one issue of us tennis fans is that we think tennis is only about us hardcore fans. There is probably more casuals than the hardcore fans, let's just be real, or there's more casuals who are willing to spend more money than the hardcore fans, because we are glued to our TV rather than traveling up and down to go to the tennis tournaments, which makes sense because it's expensive. And one thing he said is that 15 years throughout his career in the industry is that the number one question he always get is, can Serena Williams be a man? Can Aryna Sabalenka be a man? That is how the idea came about. So if people are really upset, not that I'm defending Stu, because I personally feel, I'm not really mad at the tournament. I'm just mad at the name of it. I'm mad that they went to Piers Morgan to promote it. And that's how the whole transgender woman tennis thing went crazy. That's what I'm really mad about. I feel like it's disrespectful to Billie Jean King, who Billie Jean King should be enjoying with her wife, life, but she's out here still promoting the sport only to have the number one WTA player to be doing things like this. Do you get what I mean? To me, it's just a slap to her face. That is my issue. I don't think there's anything bad about the whole, like, a man playing against a woman, because like it or not, our world is still backwards. As much as we are quote unquote woke, our world is still very backwards. And people are asking Stu, can you see a man and a woman playing against each other?
I'm sorry. Maybe some of us are too woke. I'm joking.
No, but it's true. And it's coming from us who has a platform where we're celebrating black players. But still, do you get what I mean? Like, we need to say what it is. So really and truly, if people are mad about this, let's be mad at where society is today. Because Stu would have never come up with this if this didn't happen. He also said that he's someone who has to take risk. He doesn't want to make it simple and nice and blah, blah, blah. And hopefully it could grow into something else. Don't get me wrong. I can totally... And when he said that, he means that, for example, having Carlos play against Aryna Sabalenka, which if that was the case, a lot of people have not had a problem with this. And I can understand. Don't get me wrong, because a lot of people also have issue with Nick Kyrgios because of his comments towards women and also his past legal issues. Although I've said to you guys, go read that case properly. Some of you guys did not read that case. But yeah, so there's a... I'm not for it. There's so many resources that can be used to promote the sports in a better way. I did not like, however, in the interview that I don't like when my intelligence is being insulted. Don't come and tell me you're doing this to promote women's tennis or promote tennis. And there's many different ways to do that. Listen, it was a fun thing and it made sense money-wise because those two are in my agency and want to get extra money. Obviously, you can't say that. But yeah, those are my issues with it. But I like to play devil advocate most times anyway. So yeah.
That's why I loved Tamani Carriol's piece in The Guardian.
Piece on it, yeah.
He posted. And the end line was basically like, if you want to know how good women's tennis is, go and watch women's tennis.
Exactly.
And, it's actually there for you to see. Yeah, that's the end of that. Let's, before we wrap up, talk about what's gone on this first week of the new season. So on the court, Coco Gauff doing her thing. As we record this today, actually, she just beat Iga Świątek in a... I guess it was a pretty thrilling match, to be fair.
Straight sets. The fourth last match against each other where Coco has won in straight sets, mind you.
I woke up at 6-4, 4-love, and I was like, damn. But yeah, like, she looks like she's in a good place, considering as well, she did lose to the Spaniard, Jessica Buzas Mineiro in three sets. And there was a bagel in that match. But she bounced back so well against Maria Sakkari in her next singles match.
She did. And Sakkari's been playing really well as well, mind you.
Yeah, no, she has. Unfortunately, USA, they're now out. So Poland did beat them in the doubles, in the deciding doubles. It was...
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Gauff and Christian Harrison, playing against, I think, Kawa and Zielinski. And they lost in the deciding set tiebreak. So that means Poland will play Switzerland in the United Cup final. I've really enjoyed United Cup. I do enjoy the tournament. Like, I think it's a nice way to start the year.
100%. I think it's great. People always love it. It is unfortunate that the USA lost, but who cares? Because Coco won that single match.
Two-time champions as well, USA.
The two-time champion. But aside from that, I just like when it's like a good match. It wasn't a thing of like, oh, she just beat down Iga completely. That first set was really good, very entertaining, great movements, great, like, you know, a lot of defense as well from both of them, a lot of power. Like, literally both of those sets could have finished so much quicker, but obviously both of them being champions that they are, they were fighting through.
It was high level.
I will say, I posted a TikTok just on this right now, but I will say my two biggest takeaways from the Iga and Coco match is that, number one, I need people to mention Coco's tennis IQ a little bit more. It's not every day she's a great athlete. I know you guys say the word pusher a lot. I know you guys say the word, she's great at studying her opponents and whatnot. No. Her tennis IQ is up there. I'm going to need you to put some little bit of respect on it. And number two, you players that come into matches here and only focus on her forehand, that's got to stop now, because that's exactly what Iga did. She just literally, she was just aiming for that. She had nothing else but that, especially on the first set. Most of her shots were just aiming for her forehand. But you guys have not even noticed or actually gave her credit that her forehand has improved so much.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that last season. I was like, you guys have been crying up and down saying this forehand is bad. We're never going to win anything with this forehand. She's improved it. I would like you to write a handwritten letter to Coco Gauff and say, hey, Coco, congratulations for improving a forehand, because the way you guys were yapping about that forehand was absolutely insane. So you guys need to come with something a little bit different. But a massive word on to the girls for giving me a great match. I love the competition that they're in, them two. And again, man, it was great. Unfortunate that, you know, USA couldn't win, but Coco can't do everything. She can't help you guys all the time. Fritz, get up.
Stop it.
Wake up, sir.
Her catch looks like he's back though, boy. Like,
hey, yo, Onk, we miss you. You look good. You look good. So, yeah, who do you think is going to win, Poland or Switzerland?
Yeah, Poland. You got to say Poland. Although Switzerland are playing well, like Benčić, she's doing her thing.
Benčić, I don't know what you're on, yeah, Ben. Benčić, you better relax.
Okay. I think Poland are going to be. Yeah, they're going to be too strong. So just quickly on Coco as well. Did you see what she said about American fans and like traveling? I understood what she meant, and I one thing I'm going to say, I respect her honesty, because before she even answered, she was like, I'm going to be honest. I was like, that is so refreshing. Like, and I wish more athletes were like that, instead of giving honest answers and not just
the issue with that is you give honest answers and then they get bombarded, just like she was literally just after that. Do you get why? I'm not against you. I'm with you on that, but this is, I don't blame players anymore, keeping it real, because you say what it is. You go to bed, wake up, and someone's telling you to KMS just because of, you know, like, it's just ridiculous.
But again, to her credit, and again, this is something we've always said, she then basically explained.
She did.
Herself, like on Twitter, I think it was, mm-hmm. or X.
Yeah,
it these days. But, and again, that for me, she does not get enough credit for just being so mature and like owning moments. Like, and I've got nothing bad to say about Coco. I completely agree with what she said in terms of, I understand the argument she was making, because I'm just going to be real, Lucy. Americans, in terms of sports, they are very insular. Like when you look at the way the kind of sports setup is kind of set up in America, and I'm talking about sports in general, NBA, NFL, NHL, mm-hmm. like everything is literally within that one country. Like they call themselves the world champ. Like, was it Noah Lyles? World champions. Like,
world champion of what?
This is what I'm saying. They're playing against themselves. Like, so I completely understand the logic.
Yeah.
In terms of where Coco's coming from.
Yeah.
And she's not getting at like fans that can't afford to travel. Like, we all know it's expensive. Mm-hmm. But she's just saying that in terms of, you know, the kind of fan bases of other countries, like there does seem to be more of a collective that travel to tournaments more so than Americans.
Listen, I remember one day I made a tweet saying there could be a tournament in the North Pole and you will hear a French fan screaming up and down. Like, they have the number one, them, Brazilians and everything. And I think for me, I quote tweeted saying that, to be honest, Coco, I think it just more have to do with like accessibility as well. I feel like even the ones that, for example, I don't think some people are even aware that you can travel to so many places to go to these tennis tournaments as easy, like the US Open and whatnot. So if Tennis Channel does not even show the American players playing
crazy
when they're on, mind you, apparently these people are paying $109 a damn year.
Damn.
Right? How many times am I on the TL and I see American fans at in Tennis Channel saying, why are you showing me paddle when Coco is playing?
Yeah, highlights.
So if the industry itself don't even push American tennis, how can someone think it's worth me getting up, going to fly all the way to Australia to go and watch Coco play? And we're specifically talking about the ones that can afford it. That's the thing. Like the sport needs to be promoted throughout the year. I think Maria Sharapova explained it the best when she was like, notice how you get so many fans during the US Open, and after the US Open, drops like flies because no one is taking them from that US Open to the Asian swing. You had all of these great American players doing so good, doing Roland Garros and the TNT. And that's actually a perfect example. TNT Sports took over Roland Garros last year. Coco wins. American players are doing great. Now you literally have Americans talking about, hey, I'm going to go to Roland Garros this year. Black Girls Tennis Club, they're literally doing a whole package holiday thing that you even posted on our story about going together. Hey, let's all go, black woman, and watch the thing, watch Roland Garros all together. And I'm not saying that wouldn't have happened, but I'm pretty sure the fact that Coco won that match and there was a good coverage of TNT Sports helped doing those things. So that's what I'm saying. Right, people are fighting the wrong people when it comes to tennis. Don't fight the players. Don't fight the commentators. Don't fight. So fight the industry that's trying to gatekeep, that's trying to, you know, but we know why they're doing that. They don't want us there, but hey, we're gonna shake the space. Try to stop me. Me and my homies gonna pull up. But
shouts out to you as well with the TikTok. Was it Lucy Deuces?
It's
that.
Lucy Deuce. All right, guys. You know, there's not a lot of real ones in this tennis thing, but you know, I'm one of the few. But all jokes aside, I wanted to push a little bit more of my own brand. I want to be more out there. So I have launched, if you follow the Black Spin Global TikTok, you've already seen this. I basically rebranded it, called it Lucy Deuce, you know, little fun play there. And yeah, I'm going to do what I'm doing, just talking about tennis in general. Still going to focus on black players. Don't get it twisted. I'm still BSG. BSG is us, and BSG is still going to be there. So yeah, so that's pretty much it. But yeah, I'm looking forward to doing more things in that space. We need more of us
100%,
in this 100%. Tennis place, you know. We know everything, more. Not just the black tennis players.
Well-rounded out here.
Exactly.
Just staying with United Cup, so we also saw Victoria Mboko,
yes,
Felix Auger-Aliassime, Naomi Osaka, Jasmine Paolini, they also kicked off their seasons at the United Cup. They all picked up a win and a defeat. Very good to see Mboko, man, and Felix play doubles. Did you see that?
It was nice. It was even nicer, the picture of Felix's dad and Mboko's dad that he posted. No, that was such a nice moment.
Two African uncles.
Congo and Togo, stand up. Stand up. No, it was really nice. It was really nice. But yeah, it was nice watching them and play together. Yeah, for sure.
Away from the United Cup. So shouts out to Michael Moe, man.
I am so happy that he's back.
He did have to be, unfortunately.
He retired. Yeah.
Marcus Giron in the second set. I think it was a set and a breakdown in that second. But
yeah.
Sorry, what were you going to say?
I think it was like a pelvic injury or something?
I don't actually know.
Yeah, it was something like that, yeah.
But basically, last season, he literally only won two matches on the ATP tour. And he's already done that this season. So he used his protective ranking to get into qualifying in Hong Kong. Mm-hmm. And like you said, made it all the way to the quarterfinal. So,
and he beat Karen Khachanov.
Exactly. Huge win. He's actually never lost to him in terms of the ATP tour.
Oh, I think only once. I think it's not 4-1. Or is it 4-0?
No, it's...
Oh, really? Okay.
He's not lost. I thought it was 4-1.
But either way, yeah, great stuff from him. It was nice. I really hope that, you know, he's feeling good enough for the Australian Open for sure.
Yeah. Also, Giovanni Pettiperegard made it onto the quarterfinals.
Yes.
Got a good win over Tommy Paul in the first round.
Yes.
Did end up losing to another American, actually. I was thinking of Alexander Kovacevic in that quarterfinal. But he does tend to start the season quite well, and I feel like this season, I was speaking to Uche Mako, shouts out to Uche, and he was saying that he's expecting kind of big things from Giovanni this year, and I was like, I'm with
Uche on that one. Yeah,
I agree
for sure.
Staying in Brisbane, Madison Keys also made it to the, was it quarterfinal? I think it was as well,
quarterfinal, yeah.
She lost to Sabalenka.
Sabalenka. Mm-hmm.
In straight sets. But again, Keys always starts the season pretty strongly. Obviously, she's the defending Australian Open champion. Did get a good win over Diana Schneider.
Yeah.
I read that was also a shock to see it. Her first triple set match. So basically, each set went to a tie break. That's ever happened.
But I mean, it's not that shocking for me in a way, because Keys is a fighter, man. Like, say what you want, she's a fighter. She will always try and find a solution. It might take a little bit long, but she's going to find it. Yeah. And that's how she got that title last year. So, yeah, massive shout out to her. I actually thought her season would start a little bit more rocky, to be honest.
Really?
I did.
She was injured towards the end of last
exactly,
season.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She was on the losing streak for a little while, especially like from US Open and stuff. So I was pretty impressed by her because her draw was quite tough. And again, she lost to someone who's on form, who's trying to defend her title as well.
World number one.
That final tomorrow, Marta Kostyuk and Irina Sabalenka is going to be good because Marta, she's on crazy smoke right now. So Brisbane finals tomorrow. I highly recommend giving her a watch, guys.
And lastly,
not our guys, but hey, tennis is tennis.
I want to shout out Sofia Kostelis. So if you're familiar, we actually have spoken about Kostelis before, like way, way back. So this is when she was a junior. She's now 20 years old. So she's Belgian. She was making her WTA Tour debut in Auckland, reached the quarterfinals. She lost to Iva Jovic in straight sets, but very, very good to see Kostelis like playing at this level. And I mean, she's, like I said, she's Belgian, but her dad is half Congolese. So there's like that, again, it's a very similar situation to Jasmine Paolini. So look out for Kostas. It's a name we're going to be seeing a lot more. I think she's...
Another day, another Congolese. Who would have thought Congolese people would be out here in a tennis world like that? Huh?
She's just outside the top 100. I think she's like 150. She's in the 150s, I think. Possibly 140s. But yeah, she's a player we're going to be seeing a lot more as she kind of continues to creep up the rankings.
I miss her match. Did you watch any of her matches?
Yeah, I watched the Jovic match.
So what would you say? So if you had to describe like her game to us, what would you say?
Good move. She's a really good mover. Like she moves really well. Pretty quick. I think probably her strongest shot is probably her forehand, I want to say.
All right.
But it's difficult to say because she's 20 years old. And like I said, this is her debut, WTA Tour debut. She came through qualifying too. So she won a lot of matches to kind of get to where she's at. Okay. And I feel like this is also going to be like a good stepping stone for her in terms of like showing her, wow, okay, this is the level. And she can clearly hang, like making a quarterfinal with WTA 250.
For sure.
So I'm very excited to see more of her. And I feel like, yeah, we'll be seeing a lot more of her because she has played for Belgium as well, like in Billie Jean King Cup. That she's kind of implemented like into the system, like in Belgium tennis. So I know she's someone that kind of people in Belgium anyway are quite excited about. She was I think she won the Australian Open juniors.
Okay.
Got to a final in juniors. So she has pedigree basically. And I feel like, yeah, it's a name we're going to be seeing a lot more of. So just look out for her. Remember where you heard her name first. Like I said, Lucy, that wraps up literally the first week of 2026. Back like we never left.
Back like we never left. This is the first time I'm very excited for the Australian Open. I'm not going to lie.
Really?
Yeah, you know me. Normally, I'm not really Australian Open girl. Although I'm going to miss some of the matches. Like, I'm trying to get back my sleeping routine. I am tired. The Australian Open messing up my sleep.
That's one thing I've not mentioned. It's been difficult in terms of sleep.
It's been very, very difficult. Yeah, I'm back to work. I'm trying to wake up at 5 to work out. You know, a girl trying to look sexy. So, you know, I gotta go to the gym. You know what I mean? But definitely will try my best. But I'm really looking forward to it. But we will be back next week, guys. Already we'll be back to give you an AO preview. We'll go through the draw. I'm really excited for this year for Black Spear. We're going to do a lot of yapping and hopefully more interviews, more great things. I'm looking forward to it for sure.
So yeah, guys, thanks for tapping in. And
thank you for tapping in.
Look out for our next episode dropping very, very shortly.
We'll be back next week.
Take care, guys.